from the National Catholic Register. This is Register Radio, bringing light and clarity to the news and topics that affect your life.
Poland-bound pilgrims are packing their backpacks for World Youth Day 2016. And on Register Radio this week, Jeanette DeMello and blogger Carrie Gress preview what those pilgrims will find as they encounter Pope Francis in the homeland of St. John Paul II. Also, Jeanette and film critic Stephen Gray Donis take a look at this year's summer films. Welcome again to Register Radio. It's a co-production of EWTN and the National Catholic Register. I'm Tom Price, along with Jeanette DeMello, editor-in-chief of the Register. Thanks so much for joining us. Our first guest, Carrie Gress, has a doctorate in philosophy from the Catholic University of America. She is the former Rome bureau chief of Zenit's English edition. Carrie is the co-author, with George Weigel, of City of Saints, A Pilgrim's Guide to John Paul II's Krakow. Carrie blogs at carriegress.com, and she talks with Jeanette about World Youth Day. It's just a few weeks away.
Carrie, it's so great to have you back on Register Radio. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you, Jeanette. It's a joy to join you again.
So, you know, you've been covering World Youth Day, this countdown to World Youth Day, and it's been very exciting, and now World Youth Day is coming. It's in Krakow, July 25th through the 31st, so we're really preparing for this big event. But today on our show, we're also having a big event, if you will. I'm inviting a new co-host to my show, Matthew Bunsen. Matthew, thanks for being on this show with us and for taking this spot as co-host.
Well, it's a privilege to be with you. I'm a longtime fan of the Register and a fan of yours and a fan of this show. So for me, it's a delight to be with you.
Well, for our listeners' benefit, Matthew Bunsen has joined our team, the Register team, as a senior editor. He's a church historian, and he's an author on many Catholic areas of Catholic life. And today, I think, with Carrie's blog series on Poland, this, Matthew, is really right up your alley, because she's been writing about all of the wonderful things that the Polish culture, Polish church has to offer us. And so, really, I thought you might be the lead in this interview anyway with Carrie. Let's go ahead and jump right into our subject matter.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. This is a perfect segue for me because, as you know, I have a fascination with the history and also church history. So Carrie, I've been following your blog for a while, and I know you've devoted some wonderful posts to Polish heroes. I think of Jan Sobieski and Thaddeus Kosciuszko. Looking at those Polish heroes, what are some of the keys to understanding Polish culture and faith in light of these remarkable people?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. I think one of the things that we see is this fantastic pattern throughout Polish history of these incredible heroes, a couple that you mentioned, and then some more modern-day ones that I've covered in the blog. And the common thread certainly seems to be a deep connection to their Catholicism. And I think just having a culture that has been so shot through with Catholic identity, as well as rich education, and certainly, you know, the struggles that Poland has faced has also been a very, very much a sharpening element to a lot of the characters that I've covered and that we encounter in Polish history. So I think there's certainly that balance of culture, but also the cross that has just brought these incredible people to light through Polish history.
Yeah, well, one of the people you look at, I know, is Henryk Sienkiewicz, who's best known as being the author of Quo Vadis, one of the most popular novels ever, not to mention one of the great sort of Catholic novels. And you include a line from James Michener about the trilogy, which was Sienkiewicz's probably lesser-known series, but arguably his greatest. And Michener wrote that the trilogy is a sacred book, that Sienkiewicz wrote Quo Vadis for the entire world, and the world took it to its heart, but he wrote the trilogy for the people of Poland, and they absorbed it into their souls. Mm-hmm. We think of James Joyce as having captured the Irish soul. What to you, though, is the Polish soul, especially in light of what you were just talking about, the cross? There's such a wonderful insight.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think Sienkiewicz, what he really tapped into was this understanding that, you know, when you look at Poland and you look at its history, you can see how much geography really matters and how much, you know, being on this plane in the midst of all of these warring countries coming in from the outside, or even on their way to other countries, you know, whether it was the Tartars or other aggressors, you can see that there was really this way that, that Poland just couldn't avoid conflict because of its geography. And so between that and as well as just this deep heart for Catholicism that came into the country in the late 900s, that's really what has shaped the culture and history and really almost given the Polish soul something sort of melancholic, something romantic, something deep because of all of the suffering that I think is quite beautiful and very compelling when you look at a lot of the characters. And that's really what Sienkiewicz was able to put his finger on in this trilogy by focusing on these three different separate eras and the battles that were associated with them, and then the triumphs that came largely through, you know, faith in Our Lady and people referring or going back to their roots, their Catholic roots and the faith and prayer. So I think that's really what at the heart of what Sienkiewicz was able to capture. And I know even in his writing, he was really focused on trying to write things that uplifted the soul, but they were also historical, and he just hit it on the head, I think, with these two points, in certainly in the trilogy and, of course, in Quo Vadis, but much more in the trilogy as far as the Polish history is concerned.
Yeah, and he himself said when he accepted the Nobel Prize, I think in 1905, that she, referring to Poland, was pronounced dead, yet here is mm-hmm. proof that she lives on. She was pronounced defeated, and here is proof that she is victorious. You've right. talked about the faith and the cross, but why is Poland so resilient?
You know, I think it really is, again, this geography matters, and, you know, Poland has this incredible river that runs through it that was also a great source of wealth, but it was also their Achilles heel, and the flat land. You have just the ability for marauders to enter into it, but you also have, politically within their structure, something fascinating, which was they eventually got to the point where their equivalent of the parliament had to decide on things unanimously. And you can imagine how much that thwarted their efforts to get anything done. And so that was another weakness that unfortunately entered into their political spectrum, but that's what also left them vulnerable to being divided up in the 1700s by Russia, Prussia, and the Austrian empires. And so Poland as a country is not on the map for 123 years, and yet that the Polish soul and the culture lives on within the people and through the writings of people like Sienkiewicz and others who did things that made that maintained the Polish sense of culture and identity despite being taken over by others. And I think we see echoes of this in John Paul II's life. Ezra Wojtyła, when he was a youth under the Nazis, he was very engaged in the theater, the Rhapsodic Theater, where he's trying to live out this great, very Polish type of drama. And he and his friend saw this as a type of resistance to Nazism and what they were trying to do to Poland, which was wipe it out. And they recognized, I think, that, again, probably learned it from their history books, that this is a way you maintain culture is by living out great literature and poetry and you know, keeping this close to your heart and soul. And so you're not dispersed to the four winds by all of these invaders.
This is Jeanette DeMello and Matthew Bunsen on Register Radio. We're speaking to Register blogger Carrie Gress about World Youth Day, which is coming up July 25th and 31st in Krakow, Poland. And Carrie, we've been talking about Polish history, the resilience of the Polish people, of Polish Catholicism, and you brought in quite beautifully, of course, Pope John Paul II. And really, I wanted to ask you about him. So in so many of the blogs you've written, you've talked about the culture and these great people. Of course, John Paul II is one of them. But mm-hmm. it's interesting because some of the youth that will be attending this World Youth Day in Poland, just they're not as familiar with Pope John Paul as many of us are, because mm-hmm. they're the millennial generation. They didn't grow up with him as their holy father, and so mm-hmm. this creates quite an interesting experience. What do you think they will find in Poland, and how will they get mm-hmm. to know this great pope?
Yeah, I think that's a great point. It's very fascinating to think about, because even if they were old enough to remember him, it was at that point in the pontificate where Pope John Paul II was infirm and he was just not terribly engageable. So they don't remember a lot of those earlier stages of his life. And so I think they're going to be quite fascinated to encounter who this person really was, and to certainly when you're faced with the reality of something like Auschwitz, and you come to understand the bigger picture of it in Second World War and what John Paul II went through as a young man through this war, and then, you know, looking at the Soviet oppression that followed it, I think, you know, it's one of those things that you just really become to understand what kind of a hero he was as a young man. And I think, too, this was part of the motivation for writing the book that I co-authored with George Weigel called City of Saints, and was really to focus on the person of John Paul II within the context of his youth, and to see how, he was so formed by the Catholic culture of Krakow, and that many of the things that he did as a young man and a young priest and a young bishop were the very same things, including World Youth Day, that he brought to the international stage as Pope.
That's
and
right.
So I think that will be fascinating. But I think for the pilgrims in general, I think they will be really impressed by just Poland as a country. And one of the things that in my experience in spending a lot of time in Poland was just the bond that was always seemed to be there among Americans and Poles. And I think we see this a lot, you know, going back to the early days of General Kosciuszko, who was an American revolutionary and found a home among the great American revolutionaries and helped win that war. And I think that there's something, some kind of thread between Poles and Americans, that we kind of have a deep understanding of each other.
That's
because
right.
of our connection to freedom and independence. And certainly when you add Catholicism to that, the bond just gets that much stronger.
You know, Carrie, your blog series on the Register has just been a real hit. You know, the mention of all of these Polish figures who many of us really didn't know about, but mm-hmm. who are at the heart of Polish Catholicism, at the heart of Polish culture, has been a pleasure to read and mm-hmm. to get to know. Our listeners can go and read those articles at ncregister.com. And also follow our World Youth Day coverage. Edward Penton will be there in Poland from Rome. Of course, Carrie and I will not be able to attend. Both of us have small children at home, and although our hearts will be there, we won't be on the ground. But Carrie, you know, I think you really have teed up this great event, and we will be watching together as World Youth Day unfolds. So thanks for doing it.
Thank you.
When we return, we'll talk about this year's crop of summer movies with Stephen Gray Donis. This is Register Radio on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. More in a moment.
Bishop Robert Barron talks about the importance of the National Catholic Register.
You know, the Register delivers something which is extremely important, because you won't get it from the mainstream media, namely the Catholic context and perspective. Sometimes the mainstream media will pretend, oh, they don't have a perspective, they're just giving the news neutrally. Well, no one does that. Everyone's got a perspective. What they often bring is a sort of secularist ideology. The National Catholic Register brings a robustly Catholic take on the world, and that's indispensably important.
For a free 6-issue trial of the National Catholic Register, go to ncregister.com and click on the 6 free issue banner, or call 800-421-3230 for your 6 free issues. And as you await your first issue, enjoy our online content.
Let's return to Register Radio on EWTN.
And welcome back. Along with Jeanette DeMello, I'm Tom Price. Our next guest, Stephen Gray Donis, is the film critic for the National Catholic Register and DeesonFilms.com, the online home for Stephen's film writing. Stephen is now a permanent deacon in the Archdiocese of Newark. Stephen talks with Jeanette about this year's summer movies, the good, the bad, and the ugly.
Stephen, it's great to have you back on Register Radio. It's been a while since we've talked.
It has. It's good to be back, Jeanette.
You know, we're going to talk about summer movies in this show, but really there's something much more interesting to me that I'd like to talk to you about first. You're finally finished with your diaconal studies, and you are now ordained a permanent deacon. How is Deacon Stephen Gray Donis a new man?
You know, it's actually changed my life in the last month plus more than I thought it would. And the ways are that's had that effect are very different. I've been addressed as father at church.
Oh, goodness.
Yeah. And depending on who the person is, sometimes I let it slide because if it's, you know, somebody who you're never going to see again,
right.
You know, don't want to be a jerk and correct people at every turn. People have been criticizing me more on the internet.
Really?
No wonder, yes. For some reason, it just seems to me like, you know, you stand up there and you're representing the church, and things that people might have let slide if you were just a regular person, now that you're a clergy, mm-hmm. it's open season.
Yeah,
so,
wow.
But, you know, mostly the thing which has been the most profound has been serving the Mass as a deacon.
Sure.
That's, you know, we did it in practice, and when you're actually standing up there, it's completely different. So, serving the Mass and preaching a couple of homilies now, and that to me is really where it's at.
Well, you've answered some of this a question already, but I think I'll ask just for our readers' sakes. I mean, you're a father of how many kids, Stephen?
We have seven.
We have
four boys and three girls, ranging from 21, our daughter Sarah, who has just graduated from Christendom College. And then the youngest is Matthew, who is almost four.
So, as your life as a deacon, what does it involve? How is your life different?
Well, I'm actually going to be meeting with my pastor on Saturday to sign our pastoral agreement. So, officially, I don't have any specific assigned duties yet.
Okay.
But I have been serving the Mass at St. John's, and I'm going to be continuing with my teaching duties in the fall. I teach CCD and RCIA at St. John's. I'd like to do, and I've been thinking about trying to do some adult catechesis, kind of ongoing religious education at St. John's, and I need to talk with my pastor about that, because
absolutely.
If he doesn't agree to it, it's not going to happen.
Well, we love to follow this part of your life. Of course, you know, you're the Register's film critic, and we love seeing what you write on films. I've noticed that you've had a bit more time to write since you're no longer studying, and you've expanded some of what you're writing from, you know, strictly film to other kinds of commentary. In fact, I like right now and would love for you to tease for our audience your current blog about the Mad Monk in Madrid. What is that all about?
This is an amazing story that I found on the internet. It is the story. It's a story that sounds like something from the early Middle Ages. The you could just imagine reading about it in the Lives of the Saints. A man enters the monastery, and after 8 years, he hasn't yet taken his final vows, and he contracts tuberculosis, and he gets kicked out because you don't want to infect the other monks. So he, on his sickbed, he makes a vow to God that if he's raised and if he's healthy, that he will erect a shrine in honor of Our Lady of the Pillar, the apparition and the title of Our Lady that he prays to. And he is healed, and what happens after that is extraordinary. It's not a story from the Middle Ages. It's something that's happening right now in Spain and has been going on for over 50 years. So I was amazed at that story and amazed what this man has achieved. And people have responded really positively to this blog post and to this man's story. So I highly recommend
it. I loved it. I was so glad you wrote about it. This is Jeanette DeMello on Register Radio. I'm speaking with Stephen Gray Donis, the Register's film critic and blogger. And we also are joined by Matthew Bunsen, who is co-hosting Register Radio today. This day we set out to talk about summer flicks, and of course just needed to talk about some of these wonderful personal aspects of your life right now. And of course they're not only personal, because now they're part of the church for Deacon Stephen. But Stephen, can you please, let's talk a little bit about film. This is your subject matter, the one that you speak with an authority on. And really, there have been a lot of summer films. There have been some fun ones. There's been maybe some fine ones. I'm not sure. And I think there have been a few flops. So let's start off first with a fun one. Can you point us to a fun film for the summer?
Well, I think probably the most fun that I have had at the movies so far this summer has probably been Pixar's latest, Finding Dory. I don't think that it's top-drawer Pixar, but it is it's of course a sequel to the classic Finding Nemo, and the focus shifts from the relationship between Nemo and his father Marlin to Dory's relationship with her missing parents, the parents that she can almost not remember, and how she tries to get back with them. So even mediocre Pixar is still better than the best films from a lot of studios, and that was I wouldn't say it was my favorite film of the summer, but it's probably the most fun.
That's good. I haven't seen it yet, but I plan to. My toddler son is walking around talking about Dory, even though he's never seen the Nemo movie even.
Oh, wow.
I haven't seen many movies this summer, but I know Matthew has, and so I'm going to let him jump in here and talk to you a bit about some of the films he's seen.
Yeah, Stephen, you've been talking about some studios that aren't turning out very good films. I'm thinking of the flops this year. Independence Day, Alice Through the Looking Glass, even the latest X-Men film didn't really connect with the audience. Why does this string of bad movies seem to be such a summer trend?
Well, I think that there is no... I don't think it's a coincidence that a lot of the flops that we've seen so far this year... And I think the trend toward this being a really disappointing summer. I think I have to say that the fact that the box office has been bad and the fact that the movies have been bad is not entirely unrelated. Sometimes a poor film can connect with audiences, but this year a lot of the films that flopped deserve to. Not all of them. I think the latest Steven Spielberg family fantasy, The BFG, deserved to do better with audiences than it did. And I'm disappointed that audiences have chosen to go with the latest from Illumination Entertainment, the Secret Life of Pets, rather than the BFG, because I think the BFG is a much better family film. I'm not a big fan of the Secret Life of Pets. But I think what's happening is that studios have turned more and more and more to sequels and remakes and familiar brands, and that's always been part of the Hollywood mix, but you look at the top 10 films in any given weekend, and half of them or more are going to be remakes and sequels, and that just wasn't the case 10 years ago. And it may be that audiences are finally tiring, at least American audiences. You know, a lot of these films are still doing very big business in China, and that's incentive for Hollywood to keep making them, even if they slip at the box office here in the United States.
Yeah, and in the fast dwindling summer with the releases coming up, are there any films that have really piqued your interest that you recommend? Take a look at it. Read your review first, of course, but over the next 2 months, you're going to have some films coming out. What are you looking forward to?
August is usually a pretty weak time for the summer movies. This is when Hollywood unloads the movies that it hasn't had so much confidence in. Going into the fall, of course, in September and on, you begin to have the prestige pictures. But having just barely gotten through my graduation and ordination, and now just trying to orient myself to my diaconal duties, I haven't really looked ahead all that much. I'm not really sure. I'm just taking it one weekend at a time. What's coming up next at the box office?
You know, Stephen, there was one film that you wrote about recently that I was really interested in, haven't had a chance to see it, and maybe I won't get to see it at the cinema, but that's called The Innocents. Very interesting film. Can you tell our audience about that?
Yeah, this is not your typical summer Hollywood fare. This is not escapist popcorn entertainment. This is a Polish-French co-production based on a true story set in a Benedictine convent in 1945, in the event that is known as the liberation of Poland, because the Soviets wrote the history books, and so that's why it's called that. The Nazis are in retreat, but the Soviets who are moving in are not necessarily any better for the Polish, and something really atrocious and sacrilegious even happens at this Benedictine convent with these nuns. And a French Red Cross doctor, young woman who is a member of the Communist Party, is called in to help the Benedictines. And so the movie is the story about the relationship between this very secular young doctor and a couple of the nuns, the Mother Superior, who is rather rigid and really represents, I think, a kind of fundamentalistic version of Catholicism. And then there's another nun, a nun named Sister Maria, who represents a more human perspective on faith. And so the movie explores a forgotten chapter in history. It's based on a true story on the evils of these Soviet forces, something that Hollywood has not explored as much as it has the evils of the Nazis, for instance, and how people respond when their faith is tested by horrendous events, and how we either continue to believe in God or we fall into despair, or how people respond when bad things happen.
Well, I would say that's probably a fine film of the summer. Like you said, it's not one that we would have expected, you know, for a summertime movie. But we just have a minute left, and you're good at these 60-second reviews. What's another film that might be a must-see for the summer?
Oh, you know, I don't know about must-see. I don't think this summer has any must-see movies, but if you're fans of the whole Marvel universe, then Captain America Civil War was a lot of fun, certainly much more fun than the other Heroes versus Heroes movie of this year, Batman versus Superman, Dawn of Justice. Marvel just finds more and more ways to throw everything but the kitchen sink into these big productions. This could almost be an Avengers movie. And speaking for myself, ever since I was a little boy, my favorite hero has always been Spider-Man. And although he only has a cameo in this movie, Tom Holland as a 19-year-old Spider-Man captures something of the boyish high school Peter Parker and Spider-Man that I have not seen in any other screen version. So that was a lot of fun, and a lot of people have really enjoyed that one.
Well, Deacon Stephen Greidanis, thanks for joining us this show. We look forward to talking to you again.
Thank you, Jeanette.
Don't forget, you can listen to our show again by going to ncregister.com or ewtnradio.net. Thanks for joining us on Register Radio. For our producer, Elena Rodriguez, Jeanette, and all of us at The Register and here at EWTN, I'm Tom Price. See you next week.
For more information about the National Catholic Register and about Register Radio, go to ncregister.com. Podcasts of Register Radio are posted on ncregister.com and on ewtn.com. Join us next week at this time for Register Radio on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.